the Daytime Confidential podcast brought to you by DaytimeConfidential.com. On today's show, Sean Kanan jumps from General Hospital to Bold and the Beautiful. Eileen Davidson teases her Days of Our Lives return. Is Victor being knocked off his pedestal at The Young and the Restless? And Soap Central celebrates its 19th anniversary. All this and much more on today's show, so stay tuned. Giddens, welcome.
Hello.
Jillian Bo, welcome.
Hello, Lucas.
And making his first appearance on the Daytime Confidential podcast, we have Soap Central's founder and Soap Central Live host, Dan J. Kroll. Welcome.
Thank you. Hopefully this will be the first of many appearances.
There we go.
Dan-o! Darling!
Hello. What's going on?
Nothing much. Thanks for being here with us.
Well, thanks for having me.
Now, I understand you have a special episode coming up this week.
I do, but Luke, I have no idea what is going on. They are keeping all of this behind the scenes. I have no idea who's calling in, what to expect. I don't like surprises, so as you can imagine, I hate every minute of it.
Dan, as one host to another, the way you fix that is be the person who can only record. This is how you fix that problem.
Child, as long as it's not a bill collector calling you, you'll be all right.
Well, before we dive into this week's topics, your soap is the greatest resource for soap information on the web. It's been around for 19 years. Do you have a favorite moment memory of your experience during that time?
Probably. I mean, there's a couple of different. I mean, the first would be realizing that it was a business. The first advertising check, I think it was back in 1996 for $10, and thinking that it was the best thing ever. that $10 would, you know, pay some sort of bill. That doesn't even really, I mean, Jamie knows this, that doesn't even pay for my lunch probably on most days. But it doesn't stop me. It was kind of cool. But I don't know. I think that the biggest highlight that I would remember would be the very first time that I was given credentials for the Daytime Emmys, because it was the first time that a website was given access to the press room for the Daytime Emmys. And that's 15, 16 years ago now. So that was a pretty big deal, sort of realizing that I would be there with all of the folks like the Michael Logans and the Linda Hirsches, you know, all of the folks, Mimi Torchin, all the folks who we know of as being the big names in print media, being there with them in the press room. It was kind of a big deal. And I mean, looking back, it's still a big deal to be associated with them.
Definitely, definitely. Although we won't go into the troubles we had at the most recent.
But they had candy. They had taffy and they had
water.
Tootsie Rolls and water.
Yeah.
Are y'all in school? Like, what? Oh my God. Get y'all bouncing off the walls and sugar rush.
Well, to show you how far it's come, I remember the one year that they had to have the Daytime Emmys at Madison Square Garden because they were redoing Radio City Music Hall. They had an open bar.
What?
They had a fruit salad sculpture. They had an ice sculpture. They had a full hot service meal where, you know, where there were people that would put the stuff on the plate for you. Then it sort of went downhill from there.
Don't tell me that, Dan.
Then it went to box sandwiches. Then it went to pasta and soda. And then this past year it was cookies, sugared candy, and a bottle of water.
What a trajectory.
Well, I think that since we were able to trace the, you know, the Emmy food paralleled the downfall of the industry. Now that the industry is back on top, we better have some doggone duck a la orange up in there or something, you know.
With maybe a little bit of pickled lilac.
Get your life.
Let's talk about General Hospital this last week. Sean Kanan, the ever-popular actor, is going back to Bold and the Beautiful and did an exit interview with Michael Logan in which he talked about AJ Quartermain and his expectations for the role, his return, I should say, when he came back, and whether or not they lived up to it. He told Logan, he says, "Doing stories about panic attacks and relish was not what I thought I'd signed up for. I feel I brought everything I could to the character, yet it was obvious they weren't going to give me a real love story, which I found disappointing." Jamie, this kicked off a response from head writer Ron Carlovati, who tweeted out that Kanan's comments are like school in summertime, no class. By the time it was all done, depending on what you either believe or your opinion or the comments...
Two snaps and a circle, honey.
One person may have come out looking better than the other in this situation. Who was that for you, Jamie?
First of all, I would like to thank both of them, because as Dolly Parton said when she thanked Whitney Houston for singing "I Will Always Love You," it takes a lot of money to dress this trashy. So a good Twitter feud helps keep mama in high heels.
Okay.
So, first of all, thank you to both parties for that. Second of all...
Well, we have a lot to thank Sean Kanan for between his interview with Steve Burton and this.
We might have to... Don't say that. He'll be like Brooke Logan showing up for his portion of Force the Creator.
Speaking of advertising checks.
He definitely has, yes. He has helped us a lot. Okay, this is the rare situation where I am a fanboy, a card-carrying fanboy of both parties. It's no secret, ever since I've been doing Daytime Confidential, if Sean Kanan wasn't in Daytime, I was wishful casting him back in Daytime. So I love me some Sean Kanan, and it's no secret that I am a big fan of Ron Carlovati and his writing. So this is kind of like a, you know...
Family Feud?
No, it's kind of like...
Sophie's Choice?
I'm the person, like, watching the Ukraine and Crimea and being like, y'all stop. I like y'all both. But I don't know. I mean, I feel I'm a believer in everybody having a right to say their opinion. Sean said what he felt about the writing, and I also feel Ron has a right to defend his writing. So I don't see either one of them. You know, I mean, I see the people going, oh, this is an outrage that you said this, you know, with what Ron said. But I kind of get why these, you know, well, he's pretty much the only soap writer that is on Twitter and things like that. And it's almost like this, well, the writer should just be able to take whatever is put out there. But the, you know... if the actor is more of a hero, if they speak out. And we've been guilty of that, because when Slezak spoke out against Dina Higley, we all heard and cheered. But if it's an actor speaking out against a writer we happen to like, it's like, you know, back with the Jack Wagner thing, where it's like, oh, shut up. But it's like, well, that's hypocritical. So, I mean, everybody has a right. Sean had a right to say what he said. Ron had a right to say what he said. I do feel that in terms of storytelling... And I mean, it's an interview, so who, you know, I mean, it's an interview, so it's not like, an interview is a microcosm of an experience. So I do feel that they did the character some good service. I mean, I was not happy with the AJ Liz romance kind of puttering out. But I will say this, how many years have people wanted Michael to be considered a Quartermain and to have that relationship with AJ? This is the first writing regime that has ever done that. And I feel it did, it went a long way to help Chad Duell become more tolerable as that character. Because he...
Oh, I'd agree there.
I also think that he had some of his best... That Sean Kanan had some of his best work with Chad Duell. Now, yes, he's right. Daytime is predicated on love stories. And he hasn't really had... But... In the same regard, I don't think Sonny's had a really strong love story since they've been there either. I didn't find Connie and Sonny... I mean, they aren't really love story writers, I will say that. I mean, there's not a lot of, you know, super coupling on GH right now. It's more umbrella archy murder mystery umbrella stories as opposed to love stories. I mean, Sonny's love stories haven't been all that spectacular under... under Ron. I mean, you know, I mean, and that's the thing. I mean, I don't know. I mean, we're out of super couples, but I mean, but I see what he was saying. But in that same regard, he didn't really get a lot of love stories the last time he was on B&B or YNR either. I mean, there was the, you know, the situation with Nikki, but you know, it is what it is. I mean, there's obviously some bad feelings there, and I just hope that, you know, that if one day they ever, well, I don't know. I mean, if they ever want to bring AJ back, who knows? I mean, Ingo Rademacher had bad things to say about Rod and Frank too, and they brought him back. So, you know, I guess it's just hard out there for actors, writers, and pimps.
Dan, General Hospital fans have wanted a revitalized Quartermain family. What were your thoughts on the little spat and where this stands for the Quartermains?
Well, you know, looking at what fans were saying, I think that Sean Kanan's interview, he was speaking his truth. That's the way he felt. And from looking at what people were saying on Twitter, I think a lot of people agreed with him. You know, a lot of people were saying that they didn't really care for a big chunk of AJ's storyline. I mean, certainly nobody, I've yet to find anybody who liked the Relish storyline. I'm sure you guys will all agree with that. There's been no one who said that was a shining moment in General Hospital history. So, you know, my issue would be they can't possibly kill off AJ. I mean, yes, they could. I'm just saying from purely looking at the show, they can't kill off another Quartermain because, you know, everybody who's been saying the Quartermains haven't had a storyline for so long. I mean, it just sort of it proves the point that the family's expendable if you kill off another member of the family. I mean, the only one that really comes out good in this is the Bold and the Beautiful, that he's going back, that Sean's going back to play Deacon. I think that's probably the best decision that could have happened. If you're not going to be used in one place, I mean, look at what happened with Tristan Rogers. He sort of bailed out at General Hospital too, even though he had story, and went to the Young and the Restless. So I don't know if it's a matter of going where you're going to get paid more. I don't know if it's going where you really truly like the story. I think some of the other things that people got really worked up about was that Sean Kanan said that even though he started with GH, he's always felt that Deacon is his favorite character. And that got a lot of people just responding to that as well.
Well, considering how AJ's been treated over the years, Deacon's had a much more interesting trajectory. Considering trajectory
not
seems to be my word of the night.
Not the last couple of times, though.
No, but still, I always enjoy the character of Deacon way more than AJ.
I do too, but I mean, you got to remember, Sean was played so much when he first returned that he got over his guarantee. So he had tons of story. Brad brought him back in, was like, you're going to get, you know, we're going to send you over there to stop Hope's wedding. You're not getting to go with the rest of the cast for the actual trip overseas. Your scenes are going to be here on the set with Brad's, you know, Brad's British concubine assistant. Deacon, you're going to do exactly what Bill says, or you're going
back. Isn't she like a Greek princess or something?
Yes.
In real life?
You're going to go back to Genoa City and go to prison. So, I mean, it's not like he got some, you know, Shakespearean drama to play the last time he was there either. Plus, there was the whole, you know, Catherine Kelly Lang's freak out. I don't want to bring Deacon back together. I mean, it just, I mean, you know, it's not, all of these shows have situations like this. Tristan, you know, speaks out about YNR. He speaks out about they all speak out, you know, so it's not like, I don't know. I mean, like even with Jack Wagner, I mean, his last storyline on B&B, wasn't that him and Agnes, the epic romance?
Yeah. He was sniffing around Donna, and then he got ghosts.
And then, you know, with pretty much no shade thrown, where there could have been shade there, but, you know, he was salty about having to come back and sing All I Need to Felicia, and then she chose Bubba over him. I mean, you know, I don't know. Maybe there's more expectation with GH because this was the 50th and everybody wanted to shine. I guess I look at it like AJ was dead to the world. The character was completely dead. They did resurrect him. I mean, I guess, you know, that's not to say that, definitely they can be criticized, but it's like they did bring him back and, you know, put him in some story. I mean, it didn't pan out, but I guess those are the breaks. What do you think, Jillian?
Well, I would sit up in here and be a hypocrite if I was to be like, I can't believe Ron, because last week I was like, I would love for him to go Kurt Sutter on someone, and he did. I mean, he didn't go real Kurt Sutter, because Kurt Sutter would have been like, mother effer, and then tell you off and keep it moving. But, you know, I told Luke, you know, I am sort of like this. You know, I love it when you spill the tea, because it gets us hits. And Sean actually did. He was like, I didn't like that pick of Lila Bull. And we didn't either, because I thought it was stupid and it was ridiculous. And as soon as that happened, it was like AJ got Ghost. We finally got ELQ back, and then it's like ELQ was an afterthought. We wanted ELQ back, and the Quartermains to be fighting over that. We got it. As soon as the 50th started to die down, it was like, bye, ELQ. You know what I mean? So I see where Sean was coming from with that. But, you know, at the same time, it's like, dude, pump your brakes. You're still working there. You're not gone yet. Ron could easily be like, you know what? Let's just put him in a vegetable crisper or something. Let's make him sing show tunes. I don't care. If Ron, you know, people keep saying Ron's petty, you know. No, I'm petty. If you did that to me, I would make him dress up in drag for the remainder and just be like, sing show tunes, bitch. Sing show tunes. Say something again. You know, so I that's petty, you know.
Damn, Ron.
yeah, I'm gonna pull a Riley on you. But, you know, so Ron has every right to defend his writing, but at the same time, it's like, you know, Sean has the right to tell you, look, I didn't like this foolishness. And I was fine with it. So I was a little bit torn with it. Where I saw people running on, I was like, okay, y'all will have to take everybody in daytime to task with that. They kept saying, you know, and the fat jokes. I'm like, what fat jokes? You know, what fat jokes?
Oh, there have been fat jokes.
Hold up. I remember the fat jokes, but I'm like, it wasn't every day that someone was like, hello, lard ass, or something like that. I'm like, calm down, because everybody does the little digs. I told Jamie this. Online, they used to call, they never called Jeannie Francis Laura. You would have haters that would call her Frumpa. Under Bob Guza, I'd never forget. Remember when Luke and Laura finally got Helena? She, like, they went to some convent or something and had her arrested and brought her back to Port Charles. Before she got hauled off to jails at Port Charles PD, I'd never forget, she asked Luke. She was like, Luke, what is it about Laura that just drives men crazy? What is it about that what? Frumpa. And I was like, oh my God, they called her Frumpa. And the message boards went bananas. They were like, Guza called her Frumpa. You know, when Kimberly McCullough would speak out about stuff, when she spoke out about Stuart Damon getting the boot, they had Carly calling her the nastiest things that people online would call her. Jamie mentioned to me, you know, when we spoke about this offline, they had Sammy, you know, when Allison Sweeney was battling her weight, they had Sammy battling her weight, calling her names on there. So it's not like Ron was being petty. It's like they all do it. And for y'all to point out, oh, they're calling him fat, this and that, obviously y'all have an issue about weight, because no one else seems to be, like, you know, tripping about that.
They wrote Judy Evans had a baby, and they wrote a storyline where Paulina got so big that she had, look, y'all know we couldn't go through this long on the podcast without another
one. Go ahead. Tip your drinks out.
They made her, you know, strung out on diet pills, which I always laugh about these soap opera diet pills that, you know, make, you know, people sing and make Kelly Taylor faint in the bathroom and make Paulina, you know, a crackhead. I'm like, I done took every diet pill on the market, and all it ever does is make my heart beat too fast and I get off of them. But, you know, they had Paulina on diet pills. I mean, but, you know, Tracy, it seemed in character because the
Q's, Tracy, yeah.
The Q's do take pot shots with each other, but I don't know. I mean, you know,
I mean, hell,
go ahead.
I was going to say, when Heather Tom came back from maternity leave, when her character was begging Bill, you know, I'll lose weight. Is it my weight? I'm like, I don't see anybody tripping with Brad. How could you do that? You just had a baby. It's like, calm down. It wasn't as if Ron was being a dick. Like, relax.
See, my thought on it was, when I read the quote, I thought it was a fairly panic attacks and relish. To me, it was like, okay, this is a ho-hum quote. I mean, the relish storyline, if I'm not mistaken, was on our worst list for 2013.
And ours.
And I mean, to me, what I thought that Sean Kanan was very diplomatic in what it came across in the interview. And then Ron responded, and I agree with Jillian that every writer has the right to defend themselves. But I thought that, like, Ron mentioning high school sort of summed it up for me. It was like high school feuds was the way that the Twitter comment came across to me. And now, granted, in 140 characters, you can't be very long-winded or classy, I suppose. But I was like, this just went to another level, and I don't know. For me, it was like something that was very innocuous got blown out of proportion.
Have you noticed, this is one thing you have to think about the writers. Writers are the whipping boys of this genre. Everybody praises Frank. Frank is, you know, good-looking Frank. Frank is gregarious, magnanimous. He's the one they see every day. And then you have the writers all holed away in New York City, you know, churning away, writing 100, you know, page scripts that these people have to do day in and day out. If they want a vacation, they have to get someone else to cover their week because they can't get sick. You can't get the flu. You can't get a hangnail and decide, I just don't want to go in today, because this beast never ends. And if you think about it, the writers rarely ever get praised. They always get shit on. It's like, oh, we love the EP. He's the boss. He's the bee's knees. But, oh, this dreck we have to get up here in. You know? So, I mean,
There's most definitely an element of that.
I mean, you know, you get to a point where you're like,
what I would say is Ron has received a ton of praise for various storylines. I mean, the Robin's return at the beginning and how that was all done. There were elements of even AJ's storyline, which we had a lot of, I mean, we appreciated the 50th anniversary. It's not like Ron is in a wilderness of compliments.
But he also has had several big ticket stars, you know, and who knows? I mean, you know, I mean, I guess it could be fairly said, well, maybe that's, they have those issues. But, you know, John Stamos, Jack Wagner, now Ingo spoke out before he even saw Ron Carlovati's script. And, you know, and now Sean. So, I mean, and in a lot of ways, this is, you know, these stories start from the page. You know, rarely does the executive producer say, I want to bring AJ back. Go write that. So it started in the writing room, the idea to even bring him back. So I guess, you know, it could just be, well, we gave you this opportunity to come back and play this role that was already killed off by another regime. We wrote for you for a year. You're leaving for another show, and now you're shading us on the way out the door. I mean, that could be how it's construed. Dan, what were you going to say?
Well, but I think that, you know, we have to admit that Ron is sort of a lightning rod for anything. And I know that there are people who go after him on Twitter, regardless of what it is. And then the question that, you know, that I've always wondered, and, you know, Luke is going to kick me off for being the one asking questions, but I want to get your opinion, is that people will always say, I want so-and-so. I want the core characters to come back to my soap. And then they do. And then it seems as though a lot of those people who were pulling for the characters to come back, they're not happy with their returns, whether, you know, it's now five different writers later writing for it, if it's someone trying to write a current version of the character. It seems like a lot of times that backfires. You have people who wanted the Quartermains back, you get them back, and, you know, regardless of these particular storylines, there were people all along the way that were saying, well, this isn't what this character would do. So it's almost, you know, the writers are bringing back the characters to appeal to the fans, and then the fans in large don't seem to care for it or they don't like it. So it makes you wonder, should they have bothered bringing those characters back in the first place? Would the same fans, would anything have appealed to them? Would they have hated it regardless because they don't like the writer in the first place? I mean, I know that Ron is still upset over, there are folks on the SoapCentral.com message boards that love him, and there are some that don't like anything that he could do. I mean, he could write the best episode of soap ever and people would still dislike him for whatever reason.
Like,
and, you know, and that's,
Ron could be on Twitter and be like, hello. Oh, he's an asshole. It's like, woo, back it up.
Absolutely. Well,
and Dan, you know, to piggyback on what Dan said, my question also is this. you mentioned about, you talked about, you know, fans that want these characters back, that demand these characters back. How often, I mean, Dan, you've been doing this for 20 years. We've been doing it 6 or 7. How often do we read, or did we read under the Guza era, they don't honor the history. They don't pay attention to the history. Now, quiet as it's kept, truth be told, hand to God, any other cliche I can think of, no. I did not like Piccolala. I didn't like it in a box.
You
I
can't
didn't like
use
it
more
on my
English
cock. I did not like Piccolala. But I will say this. It is a historical storyline on this soap opera from its beloved, cherished era.
Yeah,
so,
but
I didn't watch that era, but it was the story that is how the Quatermains regained their fortune.
The culmination of that storyline, though, was vomiting on television. I mean,
well, okay. I mean, yeah, that was in history, but so was Luke raping Laura on the campus disco, and I wasn't trying to see them do a redux of that. So, I mean, certain things you could leave in the past. If they had mentioned Pickles Lila, that would have been cool, but to do all that dumb, the mess with that was ridiculous. Like, I would have rather, you know, I felt Sean with that, because I was like, you know, with the Jeromes in town, and AJ wanted to make a play, and his son liking the Kiki, no, my bad, the Lauren girl, because when you ride two brothers, you cease to have a kitty name in my book. But anyways, Lauren, when he knew that Michael had a thing for Lauren, he should have, like, broached the Jeromes to be like, I need y'all, you know, we got an enemy. I'll help y'all take Sunny down if you give me some loot so I could steal ELQ from my batshit crazy aunt or something. I would have liked that, to delve into that. That's still history. That's tying them in there, whatever. But the, you know, the Pickled Lila thing was just like, it was sort of like, I'm going to go there. It was sort of like Ron's Mendora. I was not a fan of him bringing that up. I was like, ooh, child, put that back in the closet.
It
I didn't not like it.
That. I mean, because it's like, even with that, it's like, Ron is the rare writer. I mean, and that's the thing. And I do feel that he should be praised for that. I mean, I didn't like Piccolala and I didn't like Mendora, but I do see, I wish I could have cataloged all of the people who complain that these shows do not pay attention to the history. How often do we scream about The Young and the Restless, no matter what regime is there? Why don't they bring back Glow by Jabot? Why doesn't anyone mention Brash and Sassy? Why doesn't Piccolala, this time it didn't turn out right, but it was a beloved story in the past. So,
and, Ron is smart. I mean, look at what they did with the references to Loving. Look what they did with the references to Ryan's Hope. And people love that. They like the attention. So obviously Ron knows his history, not just of General Hospital, but I mean, I'm sure he could have done wonders if he had been given All My Children too. He did great with One Life to Live. I personally think, I mean, there's all that ability to know history. But I think that some people, I mean, as with anything, people remember certain things differently. I remember having a nice ride out in Los Angeles with Jamie. He remembers the fact that I didn't take him to In-N-Out Burger, and I will hear that to the end of days.
I have heard that story times that you can count, and that is like when I hear Dan's name, Soap Central's the first thing I think of.
No.
Outburger.
Tell the truth. The first thing we hear about, no. When we talk about New York, because we all met up in New York and stuff, Jamie will forever bring up Luke stepping his ass in traffic with that phone, and we're in the middle of downtown New York, and I almost got ran.
Let the record show, I have never discussed Luke doing that on the podcast.
You still bring it up. You still bring it up.
Well, who stops to look at their cell phone in the middle of a crosswalk in the busiest city in the world?
New York.
Anyway,
the indicator was still walking.
That is
so,
a sign of you are too addicted to your smartphone that you have to stop in the middle of traffic to look at it.
Well,
ain't that gonna happen on Huffington Post till you get to the
listen? I was probably reading Twitter, which is where Wally Kurth revealed he is going to be making an appearance on General Hospital.
Good segue.
considering AJ's state, it always makes me nervous when Ned comes home, because Ned comes home for funerals.
Oh, shit, Ned, you a show killer. Ooh, Ned.
Ned. Now, I'm not saying that that's the reason he's returning, but that was my first thought. It's like, oh, another funeral. Any thoughts on Ned return?
I'm glad they're having Ned return. I would like more Qs because, you know, you bring up ELQ and then we don't have nothing. It's like, bring up something. Hell, mention Dylan something. I hope.
Need more young Qs. Michael cannot shoulder it on his own, and Kiki is just annoying.
Kiki ain't no Q, but
she's involved with Michael.
They
so
have
those
fully resurrected the Tracy Monica feud. The whole time they've been back, they're barbing at each other. Luke even brought up Monica being a legendary hoe lately.
Ooh, when he read her for filth, I was like, boy.
I'm right there with y'all, though. I want the younger generation of the Qs. But then it would be the problem of people would be complaining about the recast because they would have to recast.
Adrian Leone can still come back.
No.
Scott Clifton is at Bold and the Beautiful.
They would say it's heavy. No, but see, that's where you would have complaints because people like bring the Quartermains back. If they did that, you would have people. Well, this show is already heavy.
Too cast heavy. Oh my God, more newbies because it would have to be newbies.
But for example, this is just. I mean, the General Hospital just cast an Aussie actor that is going to be an interest for or involved with Maxie. I mean, how great would it have been if that was a Dylan?
I agree. Now, I agree. Yeah. You're preaching to the choir. My whole thing with all four of those.
Dylan could have went to Australia and
No.
I feel that way about all four shows. Every time they bring up a Mariah on Y&R or a, you know,
that girl
all
on
those
Days of
As the World Turns boys that are trying to hunt Jennifer and Hope on Days, I'm always thinking, why couldn't that have been Frankie Brady? That's just how long-time soap fans think. But I guess writers are like, well, you know, maybe we don't want to just only bring back people who have already been on the show. I mean, I get both sides. I mean, everybody wants to create. I mean, back in the day, when they needed a new anchor for the young adult scene if they needed a girl to bring on for Jason's teen years, if people would have thought, oh, we just need to bring back core characters, we never would have had Brenda Barrett or Karen Wexler.
Speaking for myself, though, for me, it's not so much. I don't mind new people coming on. Yes, I would prefer that they're core characters, or have connections to them. But for me, my concern is the Quartermains. There is only so many years left that Tracy and Monica can shoulder the Quartermains without a younger generation if all we're left with is Michael. And that just makes me extremely nervous.
Well, Luke, you act like Tracy. You act
Michael. They've got that little brat of Sam's. They killed Jason's first.
But what I'm talking about is, like, we don't have any young adult Quartermains other than Michael.
You act like
and I would like to see a couple more because it's always better when that house is full of younger people.
Acting like Tracy and Monica about to go to the upper room. Are you like?
Well, speaking of the upper room, Jamie, Donna Mills debuted.
Well, I want to get Dad's. He is the guest. Uh-oh. Dad, you talk about Donna Mills first. You've been over there quiet.
Well, this will probably get me also run out of town, but I am not familiar with her primetime work as
You mean not landing? The only soap opera there ever was, other than Another World in Santa Barbara?
Oh, shut up!
I was not really a fan of primetime soaps firsthand. I looked at it back, this is back in the days where, you know, maybe you only had one television in your household. I know that that's
what
a foreign concept to some people. It was back when I was, well, I'm 50 now, according to Jillian, so I would have been back when I was back in my 30s. I don't know. No, but back then, you know, and that I sort of equated those shows, Dallas and Dynasty and everything, to my mother was watching them. That wasn't the shows that I wanted to watch. So I went outside.
Knott's Landing ran through 1993, and your site's been on the web for 19 years.
Yes.
Like, how can you say it was way back when there was only one TV in the house? I mean,
you just referred to Dallas and Knott's Landing as those shows my mother watched that
I mean, I know Dallas.
Another word from you again.
Okay, we'll have to have Dan because Dan is the we'll have you because you say some outlandish shit, but we have to have Dan because Dan, your site is called Soap Central. I want to slap you with my mink coat like a dominant general. What's wrong with you?
I know about Dallas and I know some dynasty stuff. Maybe it was that my mom didn't watch it. I mean, I'll have to ask her and get to the bottom of this. All I know is that it was not actively on in the house. So I'm only familiar with it third hand and from watching stuff on YouTube. However, to say that, I was very excited to see Donna Mills on because, you know, this isn't like The Young and the Restless, I don't think, I'm hoping, where they had everybody who was ever on television in the 80s on for roles and then they never did anything with them.
I rebuke you, Satan.
Daisy Duke.
I rebuke you, Satan. Don't you say that. Oof.
And I don't think Donna Mills is associated with any art galleries, so that's always a plus. But that it's an interesting character. It probably would have been interesting if ABC hadn't revealed who the character's real name was on their website Friday during the show. It might have helped.
Are you serious? They did that?
They did. And, you know, and I don't know about you guys for posting spoilers on Daytime Confidential, but a lot of the PR people will always contact me. They'll say, you know, something's on your message boards at Soap Central. Something is on your scoops page there. We need you to take it down or you shouldn't be saying that. But this is something that they put on their own official network website, and I had nothing to do with it.
Alone because I'm so nasty half the time. But I haven't been nasty lately. Like, I've been really namaste lately. But, yeah, they don't bother us usually.
Yeah,
and the only one who will
– going,
the only one who will – and I love her. Like, if B&B asks me not to spoil something, then I won't because they have the sweetest, most scrumptious, most adorable publicist in the world. YNR has a very good one too. But ABC's publicity department, my history with them – if I wanted to spoil Case of the Alien coming back and I knew it, I would. And I would tell them to go kick rocks into off the sun is Carithos' coffee pier. No, I wouldn't. I'm just kidding. Namaste.
Namaste.
Well, dude. Jamie, Donna Mills.
Oh, you know, I am in heaven. I'm just waiting for her to tell Ava, you're, you know, pretty good. On the Abby scale, I'll give you a 6. But actually, she would be a 10. I think Mara West is a 10. Sorry, Nicolette Sheridan. But I am just in heaven. I don't know. You talking about Dan is like they revealed her name. We already knew her name, Dan. Her name is Abby Fairgate.
Oh, you. Gosh.
Sumner. Did she marry Morikamo, the Japanese? No.
Ewing.
Her name
Ewing.
Is Abby Fairgate, that's her name. Look, I always, you know, I see people calling her Abby Ewing. I treat her like Erica Kane. She don't need no man's last name. That's Abby Fairgate. So when I was like, oh Lord, it's Abby Fairgate. So Nina, I'm gonna tell y'all the real story since Dan didn't watch Knott's Landing. Silas didn't do nothing to Nina. Nina is really Olivia because she's Abby. And so Nina is a drug addict. And that's why she in a coma, because she cracked up. And so Nathan, they need to go ahead and get Brian Austin Green, because that's Abby's other little boy, Brian. The one, y'all know, he was messing with Gary's little concubine, Kate, the tennis player. Y'all Knott's Landing fans out there, hit me up on Twitter. Y'all know. All I need is for Frank.
This is what I need for Frank to do,
because everybody loves to talk about that GH opening. Well, I have to admit, it's terrible now. It does not fit, because the opening needs to be
No. Thank you. No. Put him on mute. I thought her arrival, she had on Chanel, honey. When she came in there with that Chanel outfit out, I said, you better work, bitch. She had on Chanel. She had on Chanel. And I know that Chanel because I know. I know they better not have in no knockoff because I'll cuss Frank from here to Kalamazoo if he got in a knockoff. But I was like, oh my God, they have her in the Chanel necklace. I mean, we all knew she was. It was like, wah, wah, we knew. But, you know, when she called, told that boy, is that any way to call, you know, me mother? I was like, Lord, they got Abby Fargate. I didn't watch Knots Dance. I'm right there with you, but I'm watching it
now.
But whatever. Shut up, Jamie. Get over it. I didn't watch. Bah!
I didn't watch it either.
You didn't watch soaps, period, back in the day. So you watched.
People should be somewhere with dunce caps on. So much respect, caps, that you did not watch Knots Landing. It is required.
No, it was not. No. Anyway, sit down somewhere.
See, now, if it's back, you are not a soap expert.
Sit down. So, when, you know, we finally saw that she was that boy's mother, I was like, Abby has a beautiful son. That boy, Ryan Pavey, is beautiful. But his little dialogue with her, I just wanted her to slap him and be like, Shim, oh. Snap out of it, baby.
He needs acting lessons so bad. Pretty only gets you so far.
Oh my God, when he was like, you know, Mom, they don't know who I am. I go by my
He doesn't either.
Oh, Jesus! They just know me by my middle name. I heard about Nina. I am trying to bring Silas down. I'm like, oh my God, you need to go into coma. Even if
listen,
good.
Oh. He is well on his way to a baby who doesn't know where he is nomination.
Well, when he has that shirt off, I know where I am because my groin tells me. But so that,
oh my God,
that is a plus. They just need to get him screwing. We've been through this before. It's called Antonio Sabato Jr. It's called Austin Peck's entire run at days. But what you do is you get them screwing. You don't have the pretty boy trying to solve a mystery. You get him in some black boxer shorts, bulge protruding on top of a nubile young girl. That is what you do. And that is what you do until he learns how to act. You don't have him being the you know, Miss Marple running around trying to solve a mystery, talking like this. No, he can't be the mystery guy. He can't be in the mystery machine with Anna and Scooby-Doo and Velma and Dante trying to solve the mysteries. He just needs to be naked on top of Sam and Epiphany and
Elizabeth. Oh, no.
Until he learns how to act.
Listen, someone I think we can all agree none of us wants to see having sex on our televisions is Victor Newman.
Ooh. Oh, that was a good segue because I thought you was trying to come somewhere for Epiphany. No, I was going to say, you on your own, honey. Because Black Twitter ain't coming for me.
About Victor Newman. Ugh. And Eric Braden and Michael Logan, once again, talked with Michael Logan. And in the interview, he goes, I do feel the writers want to knock Victor off his pedestal, but in Victor's mind, it's all totally justified. He rationalizes it all.
Wait. I think Mr. Braden would like to speak.
Oh, no.
Uh-oh.
Luke, you're reading in my voice in a very pussified manner. That is not how I talk.
Go punch something.
I am a man's man. And I will tell you what I think about how these men today are portrayed as boobs and doofuses in the commercials where they sell the women's feminine products, you see, the Oxytrol. I think that woman was fired by my Jill Ferret Phelps. Anyway, I am here to tell you that it may not happen with my character. Well, as long as there is breath in my body, a boxer's glove on my hand, got that? I won't be portrayed as a boob, Michael Logan. You got that? Do you want me to punch the face? You won't punch me off my pedestal.
He just had to slip in Frankie Frank. Slipped in Frankie Frank. Slipped in right under the radar.
No, who is this Frankie Frank? I do not know people unless they have been on my show for 25 years. I don't know her. Who is Vanessa Moss?
Dan.
In light of the fact
that Victor has been on a pedestal for all these years, with a few times where he's knocked off, but it seems like he does sort of have a point. It does seem like they're trying to make Victor a little bit less invincible. Thoughts?
I mean, I think that that's probably appropriate. I don't want to say that it's age appropriate, because then he'll come after me and he'll say that it's ageism, and I'm almost apparently, according to Jillian, with each passing year, I'm almost as old as Eric Braden, so I have
no,
no
you ain't
space.
As almost old as Dirt Bunny. No, you're not. No, you're not. So stop
Crawl
it.
Don't Crack. That's okay, Dan. I mean,
Crawl Don't Crack.
Good.
Now, this could be the name for the podcast. Crawl Don't
when
Crack.
I'll make it a hashtag.
Half as good as you. I'm going to be like, you know.
Isn't it what you want to see? I mean, A, you have the factor that everybody wants to see somebody get their comeuppance. Everybody wants to see someone who's up on high get knocked down. That's what, you know, people go to tabloid magazines for. They love to see the Kardashians having trouble. They love to see, you know, Lindsay Lohan doing whatever it is she's doing, or Miley Cyrus licking balls and things like that. But I also think, too, that if it's done right, there's the ability to have a truly topical age-related story for Victor Newman. It comes to a point where it's no longer realistic to have someone who's over a certain age acting like they're still in their 20s. That was one of the big issues that people had with Erica Kane, you know, saying, hey, this woman's over 50 and she's acting the same way she did when she was 18. You need to have some sort of age progression. I kind of want to see Victor have to struggle with no longer being the dominant force. I personally, this is just me as a viewer, I find that far more interesting than the flip side, where it becomes unrealistic that somebody's always being able to come out on top, somebody's always winning. For me, I don't like that in real life. I don't want to see that on the soaps. Even I know that there's a lot of people who that's their segment. They don't want to see Victor Newman be weak, because that's not the Victor that they know.
I agree, Jillian? With Dan. We want to see Victor get his comeuppance, not come.
I need a moment.
Jillian. What are your thoughts on Victor's?
I need a moment. I hate you so much, Jamie. Rat bastard, I hate you. Look, I like that Victor is being knocked down. Look, memo to Eric Braden. And I probably will hear about it, because I was surprised to see that he follows me on Twitter. So
oh,
I'm not...
girl! Oh, yes. We're sorry, Mr. Eric! We're not going to tell about you no more! We're sorry!
Oh, please.
He'll send you a Twitter punch.
Punch
a...
He's the only person soaps I'm scared of. I'm hiding tonight.
I have been... Since I came on this podcast, I've said it from the moment I came on it, I'm like, I would love to see Victor be, you know, to lose it all and have to build back up, because he would live up to his name, because you know his name is Victor, meaning, you know, victorious, and then he chose Newman for new man. It would show that he is actually living up to the name. I mean, when I really got like, okay, they need to do something with Victor for real, was when the mob came to Genoa City and Victor ran the mob out of town. I was like, when does Donald Trump run the Gambinos out of town? I do not see Warren Buffett telling the Lucchese family, you know, get the fuck out of town. Like, it was crazy. So
he would if they donated too much money to the Democrat Party.
I no.
Oh, you said Warren Buffett. I'm sorry, I like Warren Buffett. You know who I'm thinking about in my head when you said Warren Buffett? Rupert Murdoch. Sorry.
It's just not realistic. You know, we've all said that Victor winning all the time was one note, and you started, you know, you would have people start not only to resent Victor, but you know how some fans are, they started to resent Eric Braden. It just made you one note, and wouldn't, and we know Eric Braden is...
You know, this is the rare time, you know, because a lot of times you do get people upset with the actor, but Eric makes no bones about it in that interview. This is not going to happen to my character. He is mad because I guess he thinks that with everything Victor has done story-wise, the children should just still respect their daddy. You know, he went off in another rant on that interview about he wouldn't put up with that. He would tell his family to go to hell.
You know, and it just makes you look. Y'all know we have our little running jokes with Eric. but, you know, it did not do you any favors when you said, oh, I don't like Nikki getting the last word. I would not put up with that. You know, I understand you want to have a dialogue, but sometimes other people do get the last word.
He's from that generation, mm-hmm. though, because every fight my grandmother and grandfather ever had ended the same way, with her grabbing her purse, heading from the front door. She'd say something dramatic, like, I don't have to take this, and slam the door, and he'd be yelling after her, would you take it? And that's exactly what Victor and Nikki
I do. Mean, yeah, but my grandparents were from that era, too. And my grandmother did not play that. She, you know, they would be bickering. I told Jamie the story about them carrying on in the airport. I will not say it again because he laughed at them. Whatever. Yes, it was. Yeah, they showed their asses in the airport, child. But it was funny. But, you know, sometimes you're going to have to eat humble pie, dude. And it's like, you're not doing Victor any service by having him win all the time. It just makes you like, oh, Victor won again. And in other news today, water is wet. It makes people not want to see Victor, a.k.a. you, on screen. So it's like, it does not, you know, give you anything meaty to play. So it's like, let it play out. Let Victor lose it all and then rise from the ashes and be like, and what? I am the man, bitch, and don't you forget it. For people to be like, you can't mess with that motherfucker right there because, you know, we thought he was down, but he came back swinging. You know, when he said all that, you know, I laughed, but then I was like, oh man, you are.
That's
not
why it's so sad. Whatever, you know, all of the bags of hubris we've heard about what happened with Michael Beauty out there. That's why it makes it so sad, because I was really hoping YNR would end up being able to figure out how to do what the New Dallas has done so well. I mean, they to me are the textbook example of what daytime soap should be doing with their iconic, you know, older characters, by keeping them viable, but yet letting the new guys run the show and carry it on while not infringing on the old guard at all. Because the New Dallas, JR was JR, you know, until Larry Hagman drew his last breath. He was still manipulative. He was scheming. He might not even be in every episode. Same with Ken Kercheval, who they've actually made more badass than they had him on the original Dallas, that I know Dan don't know anything about because he didn't watch it back then. But anyway, you know, you've got Sue Ellen, and, you know, they're the supporting characters. This is John Ross and Christopher's time to, you know, ride in the front saddle, but you still feel awesome when JR did a JR thing, or when Cliff tries to stick it to the Ewings, or when Sue Ellen gets drunk at a funeral, because these are the things we know that these archetypical characters would do. I was hoping against hope that that's what would happen with YNR, because they had Billy Miller, who in my opinion is much more a young Terry Lester than he would be a young Peter Bergman. And then you had Michael Muni, who right up to his behavior on Twitter was very much a young Eric Braeden. That's probably why they couldn't get along, because it was like looking in the mirror. I mean, you had the arrogance, the charisma, the acting chops, all of it for those two to be the next generation of that feud without it having to be. Because it does, you know, you do get to a point where Peter Bergman standing in Eric Braeden's face smirking, I've got you now, Victor. This time it's airtight. I'm going to take you down!
Jamie, this JR, who's JR?
Shut up. And then you have Eric Braeden. Oh, you think you have me, Jack Abbott? Jackass Abbott? Punk? Punk? Knuck if you bunk. I mean, and then we all know Jack will beat him. Everybody will cheer, and then Victor will come up and buy out whatever Jack used to beat him, and then Jack will end up broker than Job's turkey, about to lose Jabot, have to take out a payday loan, and then Victor will buy the payday loan company, and Jack will be crying and talking to his dead daddy again. We've seen that, so it was, you know, exciting to see that new generation, and now, you know, both of those actors are gone. They're definitely taking David Tom in a different direction, into more of a, you know, a marital drama more
so. Oh my God, he's so emo. Oh.
Yeah, it's like, I want him to write a haiku to Victoria. I mean, he's definitely flowers never run before. And, you know, and it's not the same. And then we don't have Adam. Nick ain't thinking about dynastic things, you know, he's thinking about
laying with
Sharon. So, you know, we kind of lost that next generation of, so we're back to, I'm going to prove, Victor, that you were the person who put those supplements on there and had Khloe Kardashian sell trim spa to my daughter. And so it's, you know, yeah.
Well, let's talk about Sharon and Nick. Sharon got laid and ended up in the hospital.
Nick put it down.
That can't happen. You know, if you do it right.
Dan, what are your thoughts on Sharon? Because if we're talking about someone who needs to rise from the ashes, it's definitely Sharon.
I don't even know what to make of the character anymore. I mean, this is one of those characters where... I mean, I don't know. This is probably really going to get me run out of town. I feel the same way about Sharon as I do about Brooke on The Bold and the Beautiful.
What?
I agree.
I mean, it's just sort of, it's like, how much more can you do to this character? Can't we find something else to do? I mean, you know, pill popping and Ouija boarding and gaslighting and talking to dead children. And I realize that this is a soap and I realize that that's what goes on. But, you know, Sharon is as divisive on the Young and the Restless to fans. You know, you have Schicks and Fix and all sorts of other things as Brooke is on The Bold and the Beautiful. And I feel like, I think at some point in time, the writers just embrace it and think, you know what, we're going to keep doing this because we know if we put this character front and centered and if we get this person back together with a character that they shouldn't be, a love interest they shouldn't even be together with, it's going to get people talking. We're going to get people riled up. And that's what we're not Victoria riled up. That's entirely different. And,
nice one. Nice one.
And, you know, well, I mean, come on. This is one of those characters that, I mean, I don't know. I kind of feel like they either need to just give it up completely or they need to just, you know, kill off the character. I'm sorry.
Ooh.
I'm I know that.
Dan Crow made that Victoria Round joke. Don't come for us.
We'll send you right back anyways. But
don't come for us.
We'll send you back.
We support diversity.
You know, I get I'm you with back. That. I get you with that. Well, I am too. What the hell? This ain't a tan. I get you with the Sharon thing because every single, you know, under Maria, oh, we're going to get a stronger, better Sharon. And she, no, all we got was Sharon's headboard and her Kegel muscles were strong. That's all we saw. She slept with two sets of brothers under Josh. We're going to get a stronger Sharon. Sharon acted a damn fool under this regime. I don't remember them saying that they were going to have a stronger Sharon.
Nope, they have not given a quota, but I will Pasadante ain't gave Nan
no
about Sharon.
Sheen is like, you ain't got no paper trail on me, bitch. So,
yeah, that's probably a good thing.
Sheen, see, that's one thing I respect about this regime.
They're not bragging. Regime, you know, yes, they're not on there bragging. When you do a bunch of interviews before the story, you're lying. Think about it. When Ken Corday stopped doing interviews about fixing Days, he fixed Days. You know, when they do those interviews, oh, we're going to, ooh, you're going to see something. It's like, show me, don't tell me. Let me see it on the show. Don't tell me we're going to have a stronger Sharon, and then you have her out there poo-pooing in her front yard having diarrhea. Yeah, I'm Sharon. I'm crazy. Waka, waka, waka. I mean, that's not a stronger Sharon. And I mean, I do like Ghost Cassie gaslighting her, ghostlighting her. Ghost, space ghost. But
yeah, you know, but I would say not, okay, the writers under this regime have not come out there and said that, because Jill was in that interview too with Josh. Yeah, we gonna have a stronger Sharon, child, and then nothing. But, you know, I get you with that because ever since, you know, I know some people, you know, the two Maria fans will be like, oh my God, I can't believe you brought her up. She's gone. But let's just be real. Ever since she's been under Maria, she has never been the same. never been the same. And then they really ruined the character of Sharon when they had Sharon marry Victor. When they had her marry Victor, and when Sharon also let his family...
But see, Sharon, you know, in Maria's defense, though, she picked up on threads that predated her. Because Sharon had that first little mental snafu when she started screwing that guy who whooped her behind and liked, and she liked it, you know, and then she went crazy and kissed Victor. So she, you know, Maria took that one little, you know, it was like a little, it started off as just like a little bitty thread, you know, that you try to pull off somebody's collar form, and then it just, the shirt, the whole shirt unravels.
Some things you don't need to bring back from the past. I mean, under all regimes, they didn't bring back chemo, and we know they need to bring it back, but they don't bring
it back. But, you know, well, now, I mean, you know, I guess what I'm saying is it's neither, you know, going all the way back, you know, let's focus on where we are with her today, and it's like...
And, like, ever since then, she has not...
She needs Jesus.
She hasn't been the same. It's like, Sharon... She does not need a man to validate her. She just needs to chill out for a while and get herself together. You know what I mean?
If I wanted to get myself together, underneath Joshua Morrow would be a good place to start.
Because, ain't nobody hating on
okay. Let's talk about something
that
else.
That sexy was fire.
Now, what am I supposed to do? Because if I transition into Stitch's topic, I'm basically going down the same path.
He definitely needs somebody to be under him, on top of him, sitting on him.
Okay.
With their crotch on his face.
Okay, let's go to the most sexless couple in daytime, Dannifer on Days of Our Lives. Oh. And just get Jamie off this track.
Off of Stitch's face!
Okay, Dan,
Stitch is being wasted with Victoria. Bring him back with Ashley!
Victoria! I love Stitch and Victoria. He gonna have that girl bumper curling her hair. By the time he threw with Victoria, she gonna come in there with the big old beautiful, voluptuous curls she had when she first joined the show. Because see, when you have low self-esteem, you don't comb your hair. But Stitch gonna have that girl feeling so good with that good dick. She gonna have a hairdo out of this world. She gonna have better hairdos
than her mama.
All right, on General Hospital. She gonna have a hairdo out. Yeah, she gonna beat her. There you go, Jillian.
Beat her mama.
First time Stitch threw her, she and Nikki gonna have a hair off. Her hair gonna be scooped to the side with a French.
No, Nikki.
She's gonna have a swan on top of her head. Don't get it twisted.
Nikki gonna be like, so you must be getting that good one. That's what Nikki gonna say.
Yeah, baby, I knew once you got some good dick, you comb your hair.
Yeah. Nikki gonna know.
Considering my Dannifer segue totally failed, Dan, what do you think of John Black being back in town with portrayed by Drake Hogerson?
Ooh, I'm sorry, I'm still with Jamie on Stitch's face.
Let's move past that.
Oh,
me and Melissa McCarthy's characters, especially in Bridesmaid, we have a lot in common. Just because we big don't mean we can't be horny.
Okay, no. Back to Dan.
I'm channeling Dannifer. That'll turn everything off permanently.
Yeah, that is.
I like that John Black is back. I like that they put Drake back on. Here's the thing that I had an issue with it. I love when they bring back characters. I just feel like it was unfortunate that they brought him back to say that Bo is undercover and Bo can't come back to town. And I mean, I feel like there's really no reason. That's exactly what it is. You know,
now there's someone who needs to be stitched.
I think she needs to be unstitched.
Okay. You might have a point there considering how she looked at that sex tape in the church.
But yeah, I mean, here's the thing. They're either setting it up to recast the role of Bo. They're setting it up to have Hope move on so they can get rid of the fact that Bo's not around, or they're setting it up to have Hope move on and then have Bo come back at some point in time, probably at the I do's or something like that. I don't know. I feel like
anniversary.
Bringing somebody back just for the sake of saying that somebody else isn't available, that isn't necessarily
Bo, the best move. Text her,
FaceTime her or something.
send her a message on Grindr. I mean, I don't understand why.
Okay, hold up. If catch Bo on Grindr, we know why he ain't coming back. He ain't undercover.
Him and Hope might be freaky sneaky. They might, you know, he did impregnate her while dressed up like a mime, and she thought she was a princess. So they might get into some freaky sneaky stuff. People want a third sometimes on Grindr.
That is fairy tale.
Oh my God, I remember that mime thing. Shut up.
I mean, when you impregnate somebody dressed up like a mime, Grindr is PG comparatively.
Shut up.
Let's talk a little bit about another pregnancy, and that's Abby's, which Sammy figured out before anybody else.
She's been pregnant 8 times.
Do we even know if Abby's pregnant? Because she didn't take the test.
According to this week, we think she is. We don't know
if she isn't. It's not because I don't like drama. Oh my God. EJ don't need no more.
He needs another kid about as much as he needs that Viagra meeting.
I want him to have another kid because then.
Wait. This is Jamie, who is so sick of all of Sammy's kids.
Have any more children. But there is so much soapy potential in 5 years from now. Little Sydney throwing dirt in the face of Abigail's bastard daughter. I mean, you know, they could be fighting over Theo. You know, and then Allie's like, who do I side with? Abigail's bastard kid is my cousin, you know, because Abigail kind of act off in the head. But
meanwhile, Sierra is just going to terrorize.
Sierra is going to be running a mob ring, if they have any sense. That little Sierra is the next gangster.
She is the next Stefano.
She will be the brain to take down Stefano DiMera, and not because she wants truth, justice, and the American way, because she wants his spot.
She will be the next Mrs. DiMera, and she'll kill off her husband to become the head of the DiMera.
Sierra is everything, but I'm going to tell y'all, this is how I would bring Bo back. I would have Hope be like, you know, listen to some, you know, some Gladys Knight, Neither One of Us Wants to Be the First to Say Goodbye, and then she decide, I'm through with Bo! So she call everybody over there, and she tell them she's divorcing them, and, you know, Ma Brady have a fit. What's up? And, you know, Ma Brady goes to Victor, you got to find our son because he's ruining his life. He done left Hope, and she's falling in love with that lawyer who killed As the World Turns and All My Children. And God,
and his acting has not improved. Poor Mike Kazanoff is selling Viagra nowadays.
Then you have Victor go off on a Greek odyssey, you know, because he Greek, and then you borrow from Homer, the Greek odyssey. So Victor tells Aunt Maggie he's going on business. And then this could lead into the 50th anniversary. Victor goes on a quest looking for Bo. So he ends up first at Sean Douglas's doorstep. And we get Jason Cook back. Yay! And so he sends him next to Billy and Chelsea. Each place, Victor get a different clue. So then Lisa Rinna, and these are all guest spots because they can't come back full time because we ain't got the budget. So then Victor goes to see Billy and Chelsea, and they lie and be like, we don't know where daddy is. And then they, you know, had a little soapy moment where they be like, Victor gonna find out. So then Victor goes to see Shane and Kim. That's my favorite because, you know, Victor used to hunch Kim back in the day. And so he'll be there trying to be like, I know that Bo is working on something with the ISA. You've got to tell me. I have to find your brother. And she's all like, you shut up. You tried to take Andrew from me. And then Shane shows up and is all like, Victor Kariakos, what are you doing here? You know, don't you tell him anything. But then Victor stays behind and tell, you know, it's like, Kim, for old time's sake, tell me where your brother is. And then she lets it be known that he's somewhere with Patch. So then we cut to, and this like leads right into the 50th anniversary season, Bo and Patch together again, 60 years old, in bar brawl, fighting, kicking ass like they used to. What's playing? Where have all the good men gone?
They don't have the budget, so that's not that.
Where's the streetwise Hercules? So they're getting their asses kicked, though, because they're old now. So what happens?
One's going to be in a wheelchair, the other will have a cane.
Victor has to send his goons in there to help. And then, you know, they're like, we didn't need your help, Victor. And then we find out why Bo has really been gone. He's been staking out the DiMera compound in Alemania because they have intel that someone is being held prisoner there. Cut back to Salem. Ted King debuts as the new Peter Blake. And Danifer is all, oh, you like this man? He doesn't stare into the wilderness. Oh, what am I going to do? So everybody's like, why is Peter back? And Jennifer's hissing, Peter Blake, you stay away from me. Don't you try to get any of my donut. So then we find out that Peter Blake has been hiding Jack Devereaux on Alamania. And that's why Bo has been gone, because the ISA tipped him off to it.
See, so I thought you were going
to... Patch and Jack all return to Salem triumphantly to take down the Damaras.
And get their
women
back.
And I thought you were going to tell us that the reason he was camping out was to bring back the real Roman.
No.
Yeah, I thought she was going to go there.
He's on a farm with Lynn Herring. But we're going to get him back.
Lynn Herring is working. He doesn't have an excuse.
He told me to tell you who going to milk them cows, Luke. They ranchers. Somebody's got to stay behind and milk the cows.
If they're ranchers, they're not milking.
You don't know that. You don't know everything. You ain't the fox. Just because you grew up in Nebraska don't mean you the farm.
You either a dairy farmer or a cattle rancher. If he's got cattle,
told me to tell you. Why don't you go out there and see if he'll milk you? That's what you do. Wayne Northrup told me to tell you he can milk a cow if he want to. He was the chauffeur on Dynasty, which y'all didn't watch.
Actually, I did watch Dynasty, so fall back, bitch.
Okay.
Speaking of a bitch that's going to be falling back into Salem, Kristen's returning.
Welcome to Segway Land, Dan Kroll. It's very bumpy, glorious land filled with cotton candy and cookies and candy jams.
It's wonderful. Eileen Davidson is returning, and she tweeted that Kristen does not re-enter Salem quietly. Jamie, looking forward to it?
I am, more so than I was at first, because Days is kind of boring right now. I mean, it's not bad. It's not like Dina Higley bad. It's just boring. And I guess I'll give the writers slack. I mean, you know, everybody deserves, you know, a Gatorade break. I mean, they've been firing on all cylinders for so long. But now I'm like, Danifer's back together. And the big story is one of the Mike Kasnovs is, you know, writing bad stuff about Jennifer in his slam book. Who gives a rat's patoot? I don't care. And then JJ, the sexiest teen badass to show up in a soap town since Jake McKinnon, is now, you know, oh, I'm doing my community service. Stefano has faked everybody's death in this town, has committed murder, larceny, everything else, and he ain't never had to spend so much as a night in jail, but little JJ, because he smokes dope and tore up a bookstore, has to forever pick up, you know, used tampons in Horton Times Square, and that little girl that they have for him, she has Nicole's baby sister written all over her. That Taylor, that awful.
No,
speaking of Nicole.
No, they did. That would DH Taylor. That would really DH Taylor.
No, I'm not saying.
She's saying another one.
That's that same type of character that never works on Days. She's a frumpa, as Julia was talking about how they used to say about Laura. No.
Well, Jamie, you're forgetting the biggest atrocity of the week, because you were telling me about this before I'd had a chance to watch the episodes, but Nicole in plaid.
Yeah, that was an atrocity, but JJ being wasted, JJ should be penetrating some older woman in need. JJ, that, you know, 18-year-old rigid phallus should be used for the betterment of Kate Roberts. How scandalous would that be? Because Kate slept with the boy's grandfather 40 years ago. Kate is a cougar. You know, her last prey got snatched by the beautiful, lovely Chrishell Stouts, who I adore, so I'll allow it. So that's when JJ needs to fall into, and that would scandalize the town. Lucas, Mom, you're screwing my nephew! And then you bring Laura back and she have one of her psycho fits. I can't believe history is repeating itself. Or that's the Jamie Lynn Bauer version. You could bring back Susan Flannery and, you know, have her punch Kate in the guts, because that's how her Laura probably would do while wearing our pantsuit and a brooch.
She'd hear in the balls.
Oh, she'd beat the shit out of Kate, boy.
Dan, you...
Dan, you can be our partner in this. We have to get Susan Flannery back to Days for the 50th. She is Days. In the, you know, her and what's-her-face, Susan Seaforth Hayes, in terms of the early years of Days, we need her back. We need to get Susan Flannery back.
Susan Flannery, I would want her on anything. It doesn't matter. I mean, I could have watched her on The Bold and Beautiful. You watch her on Days of Our Lives. You watch her anywhere she would go. She's
apparently you didn't watch
needed.
Her on Dallas, so.
She was one of JR's many, many, many mistresses, and what a bombshell she was during that time. I mean, she was Lauren Bacall-esque, like,
Dan, what are your thoughts on the state of Days of Our Lives? Because I heard you agreeing, I believe, with Jamie on some of it.
Well, I do, and it's funny because for me, I always like to see what other people are saying too. Just it makes me feel that I'm not completely off my rocker. But this is the first time in a long time for Days of Our Lives that I feel like their writings and taping 6 months ahead is really hurting them. There for a while, you know, at least for me, and I think, you know, listening to your podcast, I think that a lot of people were concerned that at some point in time, Days would get themselves into a hole and they wouldn't be able to get out of it because they've already taped so far ahead that if the fact that fans didn't like a storyline, there was nothing they could do to change it because, you know, they're already taping episodes for June. But for some reason, for at least like the past 2 years, they were able to get around that. It never happened. Now, somewhere around towards the end of 2013, I feel like it caught up to them. Either they were in a lull period or they didn't get all the players that they wanted in line at the same time. But Days isn't bad. It's nowhere near as bad as it had been at its worst when, you know, we thought that maybe it would go away. But it's not as good as what it had been, and that worries me. And now, you know, you've got people coming back and things falling into fold, and people definitely want to see Eileen Davidson back. But she's not going to be back until, what, June? And that's 3 months away, 2.5, 3 months away before you could get that turnaround. So, you know, will things pick up beforehand, or do you run the risk of people now saying, eh, it's not that great, I'm going to tune out, and you see the show's ratings start to drop until she comes back? I don't know how that works out. I just think that this is really the first time that Days and their current production schedule has really gotten themselves into a pickle, if you will. Not a pickle Lila, but just a pickle.
Jillian, I want to transition to Bold and the Beautiful and get your thoughts on Crazy Alley.
Go to Dan with that. I want to talk about Ridge and Katie.
Well, I'll get to you on Ridge and Katie, but what are your thoughts on Allie this last week and revealing everything to Eric?
She's such a little snitch. I'm like, snitches get stitches, girl. I'm going to tell my grandpa. Man, I thought Quinn was going to chuck her ass over that bridge because I already had her bail money set because I was going to bail Quinn out because I'm like, shut up, Allie. Like, oh my God. Allie, she is that Douglas blood. It has to be something on that Douglas side of the family that has her batshit. For them to say it's because of Taylor ran over her mother, I mean, that could happen too. But it has to also be Stephanie's side of the family too. I did like Eric shutting her down and was like, the look, girl. But she was like, I want to call the police. I'm like, hello, if you call the police, your grandfather, everybody in that room is going to go to jail too because they aided and abetted after the fact or something. I'm like, shut up, Allie. She's just a little bit intense. She scares me, though, because it's like, if you say something that she don't like, she look like she'll break a bottle and try to stab you.
Shoot, everybody talking about what everybody was going to do to Allie. I think they better be scared of Allie, because Allie looks like she will come in there and take a Ginsu and slice and dice everybody up in there. That girl and the actress is so great. That Ashlyn Pierce is so intense, and she is playing that bat poop crazy. I mean, literally, I expect her to fling some of her feces at Wyatt and Quinn in a minute. This is all a force to creations you'll never get. And then she reached back there and just slinging.
What show are you watching? Oh, this, I was the zoo. I was at the zoo today and I saw some of that.
That's what she is acting like. Hope is like confused. Hope is like,
that doesn't take much, to be fair, though.
Hope is like, what is wrong with you? Allie wants to get Hope by herself and put on Atlantic Star Secret Lovers. That's the problem. Let's be real.
Allie wants to skin Hope, you know, just take her skin off and wear it like a sable
Allie
coat, child.
Wants she muff dive on Hope. She is lusting after Hope. She ain't caring about that girl message. She wants to be Liam. Allie tucks all her hair up under a spiky-haired wig and walks around saying, dude, practicing for the day that she could try to trick that girl into believing she Liam. Dude, take me back. Dude, with a big old strap-on that she got from somewhere in West Hollywood.
Oh. So, Dan, what version of Bold and the Beautiful are you watching?
Apparently not the strap-on feces-flinging version. That's on another channel. That's on a website. Well, but anyway, I like the show. I mean, I think that the Bold and the Beautiful is I thought the show would crash and burn. We talked about Susan Flannery. I thought the show would crash and burn after she left. I thought the show would crash and burn after Ron Moss also left, because you were losing two people that, you know, were there from the very beginning. I've got to tell you, I think the show might actually be even more entertaining. I think Susan Flannery, I forget if it was her, but she had said something along the lines that she would take her name out of any consideration at some point, you know, if other people were would move along on the show. I'm hoping that's her, and I'm not thinking Kim Zimmer. Either way, somebody said it. It was a good point, and if Susan Flannery didn't say it, she should have said it. But some other people have moved into the position. There isn't this big void, and somehow the Bold and the Beautiful – they still address the fact that Susan Flannery is, that Stephanie died. They're not trying to pretend that it didn't happen. They're not trying to sort of make it conspicuous by its absence. You know, they admit that she's not there. They show the photo. They do, you know, memory shows. I like that. So for me, who said that the show would crash and burn, I'm sorry to Brad Bell. I was wrong. You were right. You've done that. It seems like even he has a renewed energy. All of the things that are coming along, even though we have the same types of stories, you know, 27 years later, we still have Brooke between two men. We have, you know, all of these triangles that The Bold and the Beautiful is known for. I don't know. Somehow they manage to still be fresh, even though they're somewhat the same thing. And that's difficult to do, because I know that we've seen a lot of other shows where they've done that same thing many years later and it hasn't worked, and people are saying this is what we've been watching for 20 years and they don't like it. So for whatever reason, they're able to do that. And outside of that, hands in the air, I'm waving, I'm very excited here for a moment. They have money to leave the studio. Yes. They're going to the United Arab Emirates, they go to Colorado, they go to Mexico, you know, they're going all over the place. So I don't know if Brad Bell's paying out of his personal pocket, or if they're finding money, you know, in places that they don't have it.
They're selling off Stephanie's jewels is what they're doing.
Ain't nobody buying them ugly brooches.
Well, hey, look, but you mentioned a good point, though, Dan, because Katie had a scene, and, you know, and like you just said, I knew a time when that would have annoyed the heck out of me to be able to know it, but Katie had a scene with Ridge the other day that I have seen Hunter Tylo play out 1,000 times. It's the classic, okay, you've chosen me over Brooke, but now you have to go over there to talk about the kids. Back in the day, it was, you know, when Ridge chose Taylor and Thomas over Brooke and his daddy's kids, you know, he had to stay, he was staying at Brooke's for a while, which, you know, it always used to kill me how he felt so protective of his daddy's bastard children. But he was staying at Brooks for a while because it would hurt Rick and Bridget. And Taylor was like, well, you know, Brooke isn't going to take this easily. She's going to, you know, do all of her tricks. You know, she's just scared. She's scared to let him go over there and get near that badussy. And she's like, are you prepared? Like, she was psyching him up for the game. Like, you know, if you feel a stirring in your crotch, just, you know, punch yourself down there and just remember you're going to come home to me and we'll play Scrabble. And Katie did the exact same thing. She's like, he's like, I have to go. The only difference is, you know, Ridge is not talking like this anymore. You know, he's talking like this. He's reading poetry. But he's all, you know, yeah, I have to go over there about RJ. Katie got scared. Oh, shit. Because she know her sister. She know Brooke done put some Febreze down there.
Yeah, but today's episode,
Brooke she doesn't shave the heart shape. You know, she doesn't shave the heart down there, and you know, she knew what Brooke was up to, and she's like, "Are you okay? Now you have to go over there, but you know, don't give her any." And Brooke was doing her all fire best as usual. You know, no one will ever have the connection that we do. And he was like, "I'm good. I'm going home to your boring sister."
Not today, boo-boo, because I was like, okay, now we see, because Mel and I were just like, whoa. I'm like, girl, I'm like, we see why Ridge want to get up under your sketches, because I am just like, motherhood does you well, Heather Tom. I was like, you hiding all that up under there? Brad need to have you naked.
Oh, she looks great. Yeah, Heather Tom looks great.
No, damn, that Mel was like, I don't know if that's a Texas term, but Mel was like, ooh, she thicker than a Snicker, child. I was like,
Texas.
Oh, my God. I was like, this is a brick house. I'm like, where did all that come from? I'm like, I see why Ridge was like, look, Brooke, it's been real, but, you know, your old fang thing ain't all that. I gotta go tap your sister.
She's an idiot. Ridge is worse than Sonny Corinthos with his dresses and his islands. I want to create a line for you. I want to Katie by... What? What? You have not even sniffed her muff yet, and you're already planning to... You come.
That's how badass Katie is, and Katie is listening to Salt and Pepper. Katie listened to Salt and Pepper, and she watched Brooke 101. She watched how Brooke snagged her man.
That these people use that company like, you know, a wooing thing. It's like, you come back, and you're like, I know that... Hope for the Future has made us some money, but we need to think about scrapping that and going back to couture. You get around Katie 5 minutes. I think I'm going to design some dresses for you. It's like, you know, Eric needs to be like, no.
I mean, I just thought it was cool because Katie, the little sister that they all counted out, got one over on Brooke. You know. Now, Jamie, you know I am with you. I am a ride or die Brooke fan, but I had to give credit where credit was due. She got one over on Big Sis. When she ho-checked.
It's a good story.
Oh, it is a ball game, because even Brooke is just like, they got Brooke drinking. I'm like, if they got her drinking brown liquor, I know Brooke is like, ooh, but they have Brooke drinking. She's like, well, she told Bill, you need to rein her in, because this is some bullshit. And, Bill was just like, what? She just got a crush. And she was like, no, they
love. I can tolerate how disrespectful Katie is being, because I know that Brooke Logan Forrester, the same chick who marched into Forrester Creations and took over 51% of it, kept them papers that give Bill back control of that company.
I wonder about that.
Baby, and that is why I am just, the Brooke stan in me is just waiting patiently. Because Brooke is going to become vindictive again, which I have wanted for so long. I'm so tired of Brooke crying that single crocodile tear, because that is not the Brooke I fell in love with. The Brooke I fell in love with told Stephanie if she satisfied her man, she wouldn't have to worry about her. The Brooke I fell in love with sent Macy a bottle of alcohol when she knew the woman was an alcoholic. And ever since Brooke screwed Deacon, they've had her just be Hestaprin. I'm so sorry. I keep sleeping.
See? I wonder, because, okay, I wonder, you know, everybody's been wondering about them papers. On the one hand, it's like, if you do that, that is the old Brooke. On the other hand, if Brooke does that, ain't no coming back for her and Katie, period. After the dust settles, even if Brooke is with Ridge and Bill decides, you know, he want to come back to Katie and get some of her Snickers, as Mel said, the dust will, you know, after the dust settled, that will not be, I can't see them being cool after that. She is like, damn the man swapping. You giving him access to my kid?
I would do it in a heartbeat, because Katie is a vindictive little sow.
She is not.
Brooke did not tell Katie, I don't want to be with Ridge anymore. You raise my child. I'm just going to go off somewhere and get an apartment and not be a mother to my child and a wife to my... She didn't send Ridge and Katie on a wild goose chase to Aspen up in a hot air balloon. She didn't orchestrate her husband and her sister being together and then cry foul. Oh, I got to postpartum. That is what Katie did.
Dan.
That's true.
Is Katie a vengeful sow?
She fainted at the wedding, so I don't know if I would say sow.
But that was vengeful.
I would say
that's vengeful.
Term, and that's not about weight, because look how big I am. But we call everybody sows that we don't like in
Texas. In the South, we call everybody heifers, so it's like,
heifers
calm down.
Sows, you know, you can be a brick house like Beyonce, and if we don't like you, we're calling you a heifer. But, yeah, I mean, she orchestrated it, and I know she had postpartum depression, but, you know, depression is not a get out of jail free card with your life. If I'm depressed and I go tomorrow and hit somebody in the head with a hammer, I'm still gonna have to go to jail or deal with whatever consequences that depression caused. She deliberately had the wherewithal to organize a scavenger hunt for her husband and her sister. Who does that? You know.
I mean, you know, look, I'm going to be real here.
Piglets?
Shut up. I'm going to be real here. Postpartum does not have you doing all that. I've never experienced it, but because a lot of people are like, oh, it's not like that. But at the same time, you don't know what it does to you. It does have you acting a plumb fool. So that's
why
I give up.
Incapacitated. But
yeah, like.
Incapacitated. She was
it doesn't make you like incapacitated where you're like sitting up in a bed and you're just like, leave me alone. You know, it just makes you go out of your mind. So that's why I give her the leeway. The afterwards is where, you know, that's why I'm not gonna, you know, diss her about the postpartum. Afterwards, though, when she got her shit together and she was testing them, it was like, okay, you push them to that brink. That's the part that I have a problem with. The before, it's like you had postpartum. Afterwards, when you had it, when you were
every
in your right mind.
Every time anything she didn't want him to do, she took off her ring and gave him to her sister again. Anytime this woman, what kind of a marriage to a man? Why do you marry a man like Bill Badass, Scotch Swilling? But, you know, the story is true to life because I know so many people who do that kind of stuff. That's the man you married. Why are you trying to change him? If, you know, if he was happy swilling scotch and wearing tacky clothes and doing whatever else he was doing before he met you, why do you think he's going to become Mr. Rogers and wear fluffy sweaters with you? Because you are demanding that he do that. We'll see how wonderful and lovey-dovey Ridge and Katie are when she tells him, cut that hair and stop going to them hockey games and come in this house. It's after dark. The porch light is off. We'll see how romantic it is then when bossy Katie starts trying to rule over him.
Well, like, I see, you know, why she I see why she rules over Bill, because people keep forgetting also that Bill did all that shit during the Steffi era when she was being a good wife to him, when he was like manipulating Liam, so he, you know, and all the other stuff, and then he was like messing with Steffi. So I could see why she's been a little bit skittish around him. So I get that. I get that a lot, but, you know, people keep forgetting, you know, Bill cheated on her with Steffi. I mean, they didn't do the hokey pokey, but Bill cheated on her with Steffi, and Bill was going to leave her
Steffi. But in that same thing, bringing up the history, she did the exact same thing that she was so outraged at Brooke. She did the same thing to Bridget, which, granted, Brooke did the same thing to Bridget. So Bridget is everyone's punching bag. But Katie is so righteously indignant. And again, that wasn't a situation. Bridget did not tell her mama or her sister, oh, I'm going to hook you up with my man. They just took him, you know, the two different men in different situations. But Katie, they write her so righteously. The first time they mentioned the Bridget situation in passing was Hope last week or the week before, saying something like, you know, there was this situation with my, you know, when we were younger with, you know, Bridget. And no, there wasn't a situation. She screwed Bridget's man the same way she is so outraged at Brooke for screwing her man. Katie is so, and you know, the stuff that she says to Brooke, Brooke has always had Katie's back up until all this, but she has just been lying in wait, hating Brooke. You know, she disses her and, you know, says all these nasty things when all the Logan women go after each other's men. I mean, Donna did it. Donna tried to get Ridge. Ridge was like, thanks, but no thanks, I'm good. You know. But, you know, they all are, you know, they're just like the Brooke sisters from early Y&R. That's the one thing I'll give Brad. Brad paid attention to his daddy because by the time those Brooke sisters left, any man that had ever screwed one of them had screwed all of them. So,
well, the outrageous thing for this evening is that this podcast has to come to an end. Dan,
yes.
Thank you so much for joining us, and congratulations on 19 years. We would encourage everybody to...
I was just a little lad when you started. I mean...
Okay, Mel.
I think I'm training wheels on my bicycle.
We would encourage everyone to tune into their special episode this Friday. Jamie,
Luke,
Jillian, as always, a pleasure. You can follow us on Twitter, twitter.com/DC Confidential. Add us as a friend on Facebook, facebook.com/DC Confidential. Dan, where can they find you if they don't know where you're at?
In and out burger.
And apparently AARP meetings. They can find me on Twitter at Dan J. Kroll. They can check out what I'm up to on SoapCentral.com. You know, Jamie's talking about being upset and this and that. I took 19 years for me to get an invitation to this podcast. So,
well, technically, to be fair, that's only 8 years. We started in 2006.
I'm a vengeful sow, so I will make sure.
I didn't know what a podcast
Well, I'll let you deal with Jamie on that front since he's the one from Texas. I only have Texas blood in me, not actually from there.
Okay, well.
I'm not gonna test that with 10-foot sow.
Well, we know you're looking for 10-foot. Well, anyway.
Speaking of Stitch! Wow.
So glad.
No,
this guy. Nobody got time for that. Ain't nobody got time for that.
Okay, until next time, we thank you so much for listening. So long.
And Vulcan Dad Crow.